to be curious across warm, wonderful, sleep here in full grace and light. Wild life that will see sweet heaven through every beautiful face. My cool, quiet pillow, she never could, would know sad. So I learned at 3:30 yesterday that I would get to be sharing something with you, and those were pieces of magnetic poetry that I had up in my office that I had put on a thing. And so it's funny how something can seem profound when you're like grasping at straws and saying, okay, where can I go with this? And somehow when I read those words that I had not noticed in probably a couple of years, something about them seemed apropos to what I had decided was my topic. Since we're talking about the big questions, I was literally at the beach with the dog when Kent called and said, I have COVID, and would you be around? And I said, yes. And then I thought, oh, what did I just say yes to? What am I going to talk about? So I was flipping through my notes that I take every Sunday, and I found lots of different topics and directions I could go. But all of them, I thought, those require more time. You know, I need more reflection if I'm really going to do them justice. So what else can I do? And then it popped into my head, oh, I know, the big question, what is the meaning of life? We can talk about that in 20 minutes. Sure, okay. You know, and even to reduce it even a bit more, which is the question I asked during pre-talk, which is, what's the point? Which is sometimes the question we ask, especially when we get frustrated with life, or we're in teenage angst, or if we're depressed, or feeling frustrated, or stuck in some way. We'll say, what's the point of all of this? And so I thought I'd explore a little bit about what's the point? What is the meaning of life? And even why do we ask that question? And this also gave me an opportunity to try something that I have often thought about, particularly on Sundays when I've had the pleasure of teaching, and that is to draw from the wisdom of the pre-talk. Every time I've taught and we've done the pre-talk and I've posed a question, I come away thinking, I need to rewrite my talk because there was so much that came up. Everyone here has so much wisdom and so much knowledge that it just blows me away every time. So this was an opportunity to kind of mix my own premeditated thoughts with the thoughts of the group. And so this is a little bit free form. I hope you'll kind of go with me on it because it is a big question. I'm sort of joking that, you know, we can tackle it in 20 minutes. It's a it's a lifelong question, isn't it? But I'm just going to throw some ideas out there because I hope it will provoke some thinking from you if you haven't thought about that question recently. And I just had a birthday on Friday. Yay, 51. And birthdays have a way of also bringing up that question, like, what's the point? What have I accomplished? What meaning have I contributed? In what ways have I made the world a better place? Can I look back on what I've been doing and be proud of it? And before I go any further, and I'm going to come to this, Wayne, your meditation was beautiful. And I always have to be careful. I have to pay attention to who's meditating on the days I'm teaching because I always get like choked up, and that was the case today. It never has. It never has. But we always talk about, you know, sometimes that interesting serendipity when the meditation intersects with the teaching. And you thought that, you know, we had what, mythos and pathos, or mythos and logos. And it may or may not have intersected with that, but what you said intersects with what I want to share perfectly. So thank you. So why do we ask that question? Like, what's the point of asking what's the point? And part of this is just, it's what it means to be human, right? We have self-awareness. We have consciousness. We are the only creatures on earth that have the ability to imagine the future. And because we can imagine the future, that causes some of that existential angst. It also brings hope. It also pulls us forward. And we've heard it in here before, and I can't remember if it's Brené Brown or who it is that says this, but we are meaning-making creatures. It's like, it's what we do. We are storytellers. We create stories. And we can, so So asking that question is just part of who we are. It's like we can't not ask the question. And we can look at that question in different ways, and this came up in pre-talk. We can say, well, what's the point or what's the meaning of life for me? What's the point or the purpose for all of us? Or we can even ask it in a cynical way, like I was saying before, like, well, what's the point? You know, whatever, whatevs. I can just do whatever, I can be whatever. There is no point. Is that nihilism when you say, like, there's no point to anything? So all of that, there's a huge spectrum of how we can look at that question and address it. And so I hope maybe one of the things you take away is a way of thinking about it for yourself. Like, where are you in your life? Like, sometimes where we are in our lifespan will dictate how we see that question. You might be in a place where you're saying, what is the meaning for me? You might be in another phase of life where you're saying, what is the meaning for all of the collective and for all of us? Or you might be in a cynical place, like, what is the point after all? The other thing that came up around this question and during the pre-talk was, is that a reductionist question? Like, what is the point, as if there is just one point? And I think we could say, well, there are lots of points. There are lots of meanings. There are lots of purposes. And that's what makes this question so challenging to answer, because there is no one answer. And we will never know what that answer is. And, you know, it's sometimes it's just in the moment. You know, I was thinking when I read that magnetic poetry, my cool, quiet pillow, she never could, would, no sad. I thought, well, sometimes for me, the meaning of life is just finding the cool spot on the pillow. You know, flipping it over and having that relaxation moment and sinking into that. I also one time asked Siri, this was a couple years ago, Siri, what's the meaning of life? And she said, by all accounts, it's chocolate. So there you go. That's what we can settle into.
She knew your preference.
She knew my preference. If she really knew, if she was really smart, she would have said dark chocolate. So just saying. She doesn't know all. But we do ask that question, half joking, half serious. I mean, what part of me didn't want Siri to actually say something that would be, you know, give me some sort of insight besides chocolate? But I could even take chocolate and say, well, you know, it's something about enjoying some, you know, enjoying a gift, particularly that the earth has given us from cocoa beans, and that human beings have found a way to make palatable and enjoyable. And when's the last time you took a bite of chocolate and just let it sit in your mouth and just let it melt and not do anything else? It's been a while for me, and now I want to do that as soon as possible. So what is the point, right? We're born, we do stuff, we do some good, we do some bad, and most of it's ordinary, and then we die. And I think back to high school, and who knows why these different things stick with you, but I remember there was a trumpet player named Kyle, and he showed up to marching band practice one day with a t-shirt that said, "The one who dies with the most toys wins." Very 80s, right? This was probably like 86, 87, something like that. And I think it stuck with me because it resonated, because at that point in my life, there was something about material security. There was something about accumulating things and status. And I grew out of that mostly. I mean, I don't think any of us can say that we completely grow out of saying, I want certain toys, whatever those are. It might be a nicer house or a nicer car or, you know, something that we just want because it does something for us. But lots of people don't ever grow out of that. And so their lives are always about accumulation of things or their pursuit of things. And it's never enough. And so they think that they're valuing prosperity, but really they're living scarcity. And this brought me to a verse from David White, when I think about how it's never enough. And he writes, "Enough. These few words are enough. If not these words, this breath. If not this breath, this sitting here. this opening to the life we have refused again and again until now, until now. And so to me, the first hint of the meaning of life is in that with being open to life, being open to experiences. And so it makes me, and so this is part of the stumbling around a little bit, so bear with me. We refuse some of those things. Sometimes we refuse being open because being open means being vulnerable. And we can refuse even the things that we want in our lives. We can refuse love. We can refuse joy again and again. We cover them up and we reject them and we use them as an excuse not to feel other things. Like, I won't love because I don't want to get my heart broken. And if we're honest with ourselves, we do that sometimes. I don't want to go for that job because I might not get it. And it's easier, you know, it's almost easier to give the universe a preemptive no than to have it tell it to us in no uncertain terms. And so, you know, what I started making this list of, you know, to me, what comes up when I think about the meaning of life. And I'm going to share some of my thoughts and then I'm going to share what came up in pre-talk. One is, let's see, what was the first thing that I wrote? Well, one thing that came up this morning, to keep seeing and hearing everything, you know, to stay awake to life. I think I thought of that because I thought of the magnetic poetry. Like, I did that a few years ago and then I stopped seeing it. And how much do we walk through life and we stop seeing things? So maybe part of our purpose is to, we are self-aware, we are conscious. It's to stay conscious, to not fall asleep, to not stop seeing things, especially beauty. And I think that's the call of the artist, is to continue to keep putting that beauty out there so that we continue to see it. To live a both and existence, to not have an either or attitude, to say, I can do this and I can do that. We can do this and we can do that. We can have both things. We can kind of have our cake and eat it too in some ways. To see alive as a verb. And that came up, I was looking through a beautiful book, John O'Donohue, To Bless the Space Between Us. And he has a blessing called Axioms for Wildness. And the very first sentence says, alive to the thrill of the world. And at first I had to read it because alive we usually think of as a state of being, you know, a noun, I guess. I am alive, or actually alive is a verb. But alive, I am to be alive to the thrill of the world is part of our meaning. To get to know our multitudes. We talk about our multitudes a lot in this space. We talk about all these different parts of ourselves, the light and the shadow, the good and the bad, the part of us that wants to do the right thing, the part of us that just hopes that somebody else will do the right thing. And so to get to know all of those parts and to even embrace them and to say, you know, this is to integrate and to be whole is another part of our meaning. Then to give more than you get and to give and receive generously and graciously. A big point is to see, be, and create beauty, to piggyback on what we heard last week, what we just heard from Wayne. Beauty opens us up, it softens us, and it connects us to mystery and awe. And I've long been inspired by, sometimes I think of beauty, and honestly, because I am also a photographer, I think, what's the point sometimes? I'm like, it's a pretty flower, so what? Who cares? You know, it's cool, it's pretty, so what? In my most cynical kinds of moments. But then I remember about, it connects us to mystery, it connects us to awe, and I remember that it's part of what we need as humans. Reading Viktor Frankl and Elie Wiesel, when they're talking about experiences during the Holocaust, you have people, Holocaust, you have people who are in like the darkest, most dire, feeling hopeless situations. And what do? Often they're creating art. Their stories talk about how they put on little theater productions. I think of Olivier Messiaen, who wrote a gorgeous piece called Quartet for the End of Time while he was in a prisoner of war. and he was in a jail cell with a cellist, a violinist, a pianist, and a clarinetist. And as a clarinetist, I feel so fortunate about that. And it is this transcendent, beautiful work that he wrote for him and his cellmates. It's like they were compelled to create art. And that was their meaning in that time. So I absolutely think that that's part of the meaning of life and what we're here for. And then finally, you know, in terms of what I was thinking about, to give, receive, and multiply love. The Beatles had it. All you need is love. Love is all you need. And I think about, you know, what would love do? We talk about what would Jesus do? Well, what would love do in this situation? And what if we answered everything with that question? What's the point or what's the meaning even be important if we're just answering things with love? To share a few things that came up in pre-talk that kind of dovetail with some of this. Of course, Mary Oliver came up. And her line from, it's funny, John, you mentioned Grasshopper in one of the very first things you said, and her poem that's kind of a meditation on her experience or her relationship or interaction with this grasshopper ends with one of her most famous lines, "What will you do with your one wild and precious life?" And some of the things that came up in that are to balance our survival dance with our sacred dance. We can get so wrapped up, and maybe that's in the accumulation of things, with our survival dance of just making sure we've got the roof over our head and food on the table and whatnot. We stop seeing the beauty around us. And so are we paying attention to whatever our sacred dance is? We also talked about your meaning on a spiritual level and a physical level. It was mentioned that on a spiritual level, for some people, and I often count myself among them, I see each of us, each person here sitting in this room as like one cell of God or the divine or the ground of all being. Each of us is one tiny speck of that. And collectively, we make that bigger whole. And that bigger whole, whatever it is trying to become conscious. And are we what are we creating as we make it conscious? Are we contributing something that's making that conscious entity a generative and loving being? Or are we making it something that's fearful? Or taking away from grace and beauty and compassion? So part of it is to notice these spiritual and physical levels that we have and to integrate them. We also talked a lot about, Charity's meditation from last week about the butterfly. And if I'm going to capture it accurately, I hope I am, and you'll correct me. But she talked about how, you know, we know that butterflies have a migration cycle. And the butterflies that come south to north are three generations, at least, where the generation that sets out reproduces, dies away, or stops the journey. The next generation is that middle leg. They either stop, they reproduce, stop, or die. And then the final generation completes the journey. And each evolution, and Leslie was sharing this, gets a little stronger. And so that the monarch that is north, that eventually will head south back to Mexico, is the most, the hardiest, the most resilient, the most beautiful. And it will take that whole journey all the way back. And so the meaning, the purpose of each of their lives is very different. And what if we were all like this, the butterfly that just has the piece of the relay? What if that was all of our purpose? And what if we embraced that? Some of us are going to be the ones that fly to Mexico. Others are going to be the piece that sends the relay along. And, you know, is it not all of our purpose in some way to be the one that's just part of the relay? Because people came before us and people will come after us. So what if we saw ourselves that way? In really simple terms, and this maybe gets to the thriving and surviving question, is Someone mentioned that during a particularly difficult period during childhood, each day they would ask themselves, what's going to be my thing today? What's going to be the thing that gets me through? So that person was creating meaning each day. So each day you're waking up and you're saying, okay, what is my thing today? It might be that I am excited that we're going to have pizza at lunch. It might be that I get to go, you know, help a neighbor with their yard. It might be that I get to come to C3 and see people that I love. It might be that I just get out of bed and am able to go about my day. So what's going to get you through? And then at some point, we have to move past that. And we say it's more than just getting through the day. It's about experiencing and growing. And someone also mentioned, and I just wrote down, life is absurd. And I don't remember exactly what was said around that. But there's something about abandoning a little bit about finding like this profound, deep meaning and just accepting it's absurd. That's one thing that I love about watching comedians, because they'll point out just the absurdity of things. And for some reason, Louis C.K. pops into my head, because we were fans before all this stuff happened with him. But he had this whole little shtick about everything's amazing and no one is happy. And I loved it. And then he's talking about flying in a plane and how, you know, you're complaining about things you didn't know existed until 10 minutes ago, that you can't have it. And so just this, you know, paying attention to those absurdities sometimes can keep us humble, keep us in awe, keep us with the mystery, and keep us from taking things so seriously. We also talked about impermanence, which is another theme that comes up a lot in here. I can imagine Kent up here, and he's saying, everything is impermanent. And what does that tell us? How does that inform us about how we create meaning in our lives? What came up was the artist Christo, who draped the Eiffel Tower, or covered the Eiffel Tower, am I saying? It was the Arc de Triomphe. Okay, thank you, yes. And then, you know, he draped it, wrapped it up, and then unwrapped it. So what was the point of that? You know, and it was a piece of art that was impermanent. I also was thinking about, is it the Buddhist monks that create the mandalas in the sand? Or Tibetan, maybe? And they create these intricate, beautiful mandalas, and then they sweep them away. So you're kind of like, what was the point? And I think that is the point, to remind us of the impermanence of things. And maybe to embrace the ephemeral. Other people said, you know, to learn from our experiences and maybe to pass those lessons along, to provoke, to learn unattachment to things, and maybe that's part of that impermanence piece. To catch each other when we fall. This was a little bit of my own interpretation of a story that someone shared. To catch one another, to be that person for someone else, and to know that they're going to be a person for us. Teresa brought up patients with dementia because we started talking about memories, and if we didn't have our memories, would life have any meaning? And she said, you know, it's evidence that the patient with dementia will continue to keep going. Like, they get up every day. They keep wanting to live. There is something that they want to live for. And so what keeps us going? What pushes us to live despite not having perhaps those memories? That's a bigger question that I don't even want to try to answer. But it's a very primal urge that we have. And somebody asked, you know, is it just navel-gazing to ask this question? And it's like, well, no, I think it's part of the meaning of life, or part of our purpose and point, is to ask, what's the point? And to keep asking that question. So I'll just leave with, those are some of those pieces that folks offered into this. And so I leave you with asking yourself, like, when you think about that question, where are you in your own life and your relationship to that question? Is it something that's about where you are and what's my meaning? Sometimes I feel like we're asking the wrong question, like, what's the meaning, and saying, like, what's my meaning and how am I going to live into that? What is the meaning for the collective? And see where you fall on how you think about that question. And, you know, I do keep, and the other one, sorry, the other one that I came to a few years ago, which was basically to feel all the feels. I thought, that's our purpose in life, to feel all the feels. We are human beings that have been gifted with this massive range of emotions and feelings, from grief and sadness and loneliness to boredom to contentment and peace to joy to elation to ecstatic. We have that whole spectrum at our disposal. And how much do we use it? How much do we tap into it? And how much are we putting ourselves in situations where we get to experience those feelings? So in some ways, I feel like besides the love, you know, plays into that, but maybe the purpose, maybe the meaning is to feel everything that we have been endowed with, to feel. Because if we're doing that, then we are living both and. We are saying yes. We are putting ourselves into these situations where we can experience all of these things. So with that, you know, to consider your own response to, like, what's your meaning or what is the meaning, to think about the question of what would love do? How would love be? How would love respond to this? One of my favorite little proverbs, or I don't know if it's a proverb, but saying says, fear knocked on the door, love answered, and no one was there. So fear knocked on the door, love answered, and no one was there. So to me, that's part of the love is the answer. And so to think about, you know, how would love respond to this question for you? And what is your sacred dance? So thank you for listening.